that one.
Yeah. What's your assistant's name down there? I want to get in touch with her about birds sometime.
Oh. Well, you better get in touch with my brother-in-law. Charles had a quite bad heart attack 6-7 years ago. He had to sell his business and give up. And like so many people who have heart attacks, it changed his whole personality. And my sister was telling me this winter that this course I was telling Rick about that they gave together on bird identification over there. They had a 10-week course Tuesday mornings, which they had hoped might attract 15 or 20 people, and started off with that and built up to 50. And she said she thought this had done more for him than anything else that had happened since his heart attack to give him confidence in himself.
Mm-hmm.
And again, she said he did a beautiful job with it, and she said, I've just seen him grow more cheerful as the weeks have gone on, and she said, this is the best thing that could have happened for us. They are Florida residents now. They gave up their New York State residence this last year. He lectures for Audubon groups now. He has marvelous slides. Oh, they're just gorgeous things. He showed us two groups this summer. Some of my Stratford, Ontario friends, I'll invite it up after we were in Stratford. And I think this did a lot for Charles, too. These people are all semi-interested in birds. And they asked him to show him some slides the second night, I guess, we were there. And so he spent quite a lot of time, dug out about 50 slides on Florida water birds. And they are, some of them are just gorgeous. And he worked up a very interesting comment, which would be appropriate for people who didn't know very much about birds. And I was quite surprised and very much delighted that they all wanted some more the next night. So he dug out 50 more and showed us this. We had a second
evening. Yes. What's now Sanibel? What is that? Is Sanibel, Florida?
Mm-hmm.
What's your sister's name?
Ella.
Faye, don't whisper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't whisper to anybody. All information is public.
There you are.
No private information.
I want John to give you a book.
You got a book for me, too? James Library.
Yeah.
Well, I had these done 2 years ago. I sent them around for Christmas. Did you see it early autumn when you did it? Is that within your time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
sir.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, John.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did early autumn.
Oh, you know, I think it might come back to me if I looked at it.
Yeah.
Say, that's nice. Look at that.
Now, this shows my lack of originality. You see, two of these are made from novels, and the other one is historical. What I wanted to do this winter, since most people like the historical one best of the three, was to do, this is on the Empress Eugenie, to do one on Josephine, on Napoleon's wife. So I did quite a lot of reading on her life, and I never got around to getting anything more than a very vague outline of what I wanted to do.
What did you want to do?
Another play, historical.
What
you'll see when you get to look at this one. I want to do something like this one that I did. This last play, Rick, we did. We produced that.
Deb is a playwright. Yeah,
she's
not a playwright, but she's a play goer.
Authority on the dramatic.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I've been seeing a lot of Cole Porter lately.
Oh. Well, that's lively, anyway.
Yeah, I remember you had just worked this out. You didn't tell you
all. Oh, she's in a second, John.
Jack of all trades.
Omnivorous.
She doesn't curl things like I do. You see, her taste show them the bill of fare. Uh-huh. And that's the way to do.
Flexible.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, John, so he's so full of gifts and
you know, I'm surprised how many of those people that were in that camp in early autumn are dead.
Oh, John.
Rather depressing to look at. Whatever happened to Jack Willis?
I wonder.
I asked Kenneth, and Kenneth said no at all.
I have no idea what happened to any of them.
Well, he was headed toward Broadway, and yes. I don't know whether he got there or not. I thought he was a very talented actor, anyway. I never knew how good a graduate student he was. Always a little doubtful about that.
Oh, yes. Yes, it just didn't go together.
No. But he had real, one of the few people associated with the faculty players that had real stage presence. I never shall forget the production of Shadow and Substance, when he played the Monsignor in that, and the pencil, I think, that dropped very awkwardly. It wasn't supposed to. This was in the performance, and I remember his stopping the action, turning around and picking up that pencil and handing it back to whoever it was that dropped it, all in perfect character and right on the spur of the moment. And it was a touch that somehow added to the character immeasurably, which he just did offhand as it happened. The amazing stage presence and know-how as to how to conduct himself on moments of that sort.
I didn't have to do that.
I never could do that. If I lost my lines, I was lost. I was. The time we did Berkeley Square, and I had that rave scene when I battered poor Alvin Nielsen on the head with the candelabra and so forth, and completely lost my lines in that. I got so excited that I was just whamming away. They were screaming my cue from the sidelines, and I was trying to calm down enough so I could get back on the track again there. What a day that was. That was an awful, the dress rehearsal for that. This was a costume play. You know Berkeley Square?
No.
It was made from a Henry James novel. In the sense of the past, man who moves back into the 18th century and changes places with an ancestor from that period. Well, I was playing the lead. The only time I ever played a lead in the faculty play, we were all these 18th century costumes, dress rehearsal. I leaned over to pick up something, do something, and my pants split right back with a terrible zip. Of course, brought down the production momentarily, and as much haste in sewing me back up so I would be in reputable condition for the performance the next night.
Well, now, did you knock around with the players up there?
Gilbert?
No. No, there have been people who wanted to start faculty players there. We have a local group, but I didn't do anything, Guy, because I got to the point in the last faculty players where I was just never sure that I had my lines down. My mind was that uncertain right up to the moment that the production began, and I thought, I'm not going to go through with this.
John!
Well, I after all the years, 10 years of this, I should have been a little bit more certain, but I got less certain as time went on.
They say that your mind doesn't wear out, but my experience...
I ran down.
It does something happens to it.
Well, I've been to this first play of the murder mystery, and we've read it a couple of times. I tried to get our own theater college to do it. But it isn't the sort of thing that any one of our directors has ever wanted to undertake. And we have an experimental theater, too. We have a theater not unlike the new one at Tennessee. Ours isn't as big as that, but it has the downstairs rehearsal and the downstairs small theater and whatnot. And with the 13 people in the cast, it's too big for the stage downstairs. So I've never had a chance to see how it might act. I had a very interesting time with that first one. After we got through Early Autumn, the Factory Players wanted to do something else, and I said, well, I have this murder mystery that I had always liked and thought would make a good play. So I wrote Mrs. Hart and asked for permission to dramatize this. And she wrote back that she had dramatized it herself, and it had been produced by the Cleveland Little Theater Group, and she would send me a copy of this for us to use. Well, this is what I wanted. I wanted to do it myself. But she never sent me a copy, and so finally, a year later, I wrote again and said I would still like to do her play since I hadn't received a copy from her. And she wrote back and said, well, she couldn't find a copy of it, but she was sure that her agent in New York had one, so that she would write him. Well, then the war came along, and the whole business got dropped. Well, after I went to attend to Galesburg, again, I thought, well, here's a chance, maybe, of getting this thing done and on the boards, and we'll see if it's any good. So I wrote her again, and this time got a letter back from her lawyer that Mrs. Hart had died in the meantime, and that her husband had the copyright to her book. She wrote novels and mystery stories. He was a New York millionaire, and I got no response from him at all. But I tried the lawyer again, and he referred me to the agent. So when I was in New York, I went in to see the agent and told him what the situation was, and that the last letter I'd had from Mrs. Hart said that he had a copy of this, and he said, well, he didn't know whether he did or not, but he would see. So he called me a day or so later and said that he had found a copy of the play, and if I'd stop by, we could talk about this again. Well, when I went in, I always surmised, as I had no way of knowing one way or another, this is done in two acts. And I rather think that she did it in two acts, too. And when he produced the manuscript, he just sort of flipped the pages, and he said, this is all we could find, and it isn't complete. There isn't a final act for this. And I sort of flipped the pages, too, and so far as I could tell, the whole thing was there. But I thought, it's not up to me to tell him that the play is complete. If he thinks it isn't, I'm going to continue to let him think so. So I didn't say anything further except the fact, well, this obviously wouldn't do for our purposes, and I would still like to have the permission to do the dramatizing. So then they gave me written permission to dramatize it for only amateur production. But I sent it off to New York after we read it through, and I'd had some criticism, made some changes in it, and well, I guess the agent kept it for 6 months or something of this sort, and finally sent it back, and he said that he didn't think this was the sort of thing that would go on Broadway at the present time, not enough sex or something of that sort. That was the days before there wasn't too much either. So. But that stretched out over about 6 years from the time I started in trying to get permission to do this.
And you didn't have a copy?
I copied the novel.
But not.
But I never did get a copy of the play, which she said, our librarian, Ben Richards, was, he and his wife were both natives of Cleveland. And while this thing was going on, Alice said to me one time, I think we saw that at one time. And she said, Ben, don't you remember our going to see a murder mystery of some sort? And he said, well, I have a sort of dim recollection. He said, well, look in our archives. So he dug out a review of this from the Cleveland paper at the time it was produced there, and it said it was on its way to Broadway and whatnot. But it never got to Broadway. I don't know whether other people didn't think it was good enough for Broadway. This was back in 1932 or 3, something like that.
But you were just determined to do it on this book.
I was just determined to do it now, myself. It has a double
John,
tricky
you
ending.
Huh?
It has a double tricky ending to it. So that some people are still baffled as to who did the murder when they get through.
you need needed a secretary. You never had a secretary.
Never had a secretary. I had a student assistant once under this CPA program. What was that when we had students? I had the worst time with that boy. I couldn't find things for him to do. I said, no more of this. I'm spending more time trying to think of things for him to do than take than doing it myself.
See, you really never get anywhere until you have a private secretary.
Oh, I don't need anybody to sit on my lap. I can get along without that.
Yeah, but somebody to fix coffee.
Oh, that's it.
It just scares me, just the idea of having a secretary. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't face the day keeping that secretary busy. No.
Now, Alvin.
See, that's the reason I haven't accomplished anything.
Alvin has 9 secretaries, somebody told me.
Yeah. Well, that's more like it, you see.
Yeah.
Does Kenneth have a secretary?
Not full time. No, I think he has one to use when he wants.
Well, that's nothing. Anyone can do that. He needs a full time secretary.
Well, I think he told me he was teaching only 2/3 time now, since he's in charge of all the graduate program now. So that this is supposed to take up the other third of his time.
Kenneth is in charge of the graduate program. Is he in pretty good shape?
Yeah. Saucy as ever.
Spending his money on having lavish parties, guy.
And he had a very nice party for me. I didn't ask about Mamu that night. Of course, I thought about Andrew. Why? When I was there 2 years ago, Randy was sick, mm-hmm. and Ellis and Mamu came.
Yeah.
But this time, for some reason or other, I never thought to ask. I didn't think to ask Kenneth afterwards either. Why, whether he hadn't asked her, or whether she wasn't there, or what the situation was. I can't believe that if she'd been there, he wouldn't have asked her. Although he didn't ask Peg Borth, I don't understand the man sometimes.
Well, he asked the whole family, I think. You know, that kind of. Well, anyway. But he could do something with his house, if you'd suggest it.
Which I'm not about to do. Well, he has these electric heaters. In it, which are really not adequate to heat the house, so that he bundles himself up, and you bundle yourself up and make do. And that driveway of his, I don't think he could do anything about that, but that is one of the most god-awful approaches that I've ever had to navigate. It goes right up like this.
Yeah.
And every time I come down, I scrape my tailpipe or my muffler or something on this angle. And there's no place on the street. You can't park on the street at all. The street is about as wide as this room. And you've got to go up the driveway. The ones on the other side of the street aren't quite so steep, but all the ones on that side, the side that he's on, are just like that.
Yeah. And you can't get around it.
No. The only thing they could have done would have been to burrow into the hill and put the garage on the street level and have to go downstairs to it all the time.
Yeah.
Not for built to stand.
Yeah. Like, well, the least they could have put it down low enough to scrape the tailpipe.
You know. But it's right on the level with the house, right? And the lawn is such that there's absolutely no possibility of mowing it. The leaves just continue to pile up.
I saw somebody mowing a lawn like that that went straight down with they had a rope tied to the lawnmower, and they'd let the rope out, and the lawnmower would go zip down to the street, and that was just as far as the rope would go. And then they'd pull it back up, and they'd move over a little bit, and zip, go down to the street, and they'd pull it back up again.
Yeah.
Pretty effective.
Now, this couldn't work there because it's all bushes and trees and couldn't wind in and out of those, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's heavily wooded all through that thing. Well, it strikes me as being arduous anyway, living on nice flat prairie country land as I have all these years. Not a ripple in the terrain in Galesburg at all.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to get back to the hill country for a little while.
That's one thing I find of the central Florida towns, the most attractive to me has been Claremont. Simply because it's in rolling country, I think. You've got the ups and downs in there instead of this flat land that you see so many other places.
Yeah, you come down 27 and run into Claremont.
Mm-hmm. And cross 50 or whatever it is the other way.
Yes, and the orange groves just go as far as you can see.
There was another little town in there that I thought was nice, too. For most of these Central Florida towns, I didn't get anything for it.
Now, you don't run into these old country places anymore, do you?
They all get torn down and high-rises put up.
Well, they get... Everything has torn them down. One thing is the tax assessor. They tax you if you have a building like this and you're not even using it. They still tax you for it, and people don't want to pay the tax. And they'll just let it go to rack. A lot of nice places have gone like that. Now this one, fortunately, has been lived in ever since it was built around 1890, 1902. And that was one of the first ones. The other houses you see here were built around 1910.
Now this was all originally farmland through here?
This was on the vegetable frontier in the 80s and 90s. And it was farmed like all the other country. You see, they all quit farming around in the middle 50s. And this house, fortunately, has had a roof on it.
No hurricanes, though.
No, but, I mean, a good roof, you see, it wouldn't leak. I imagine it had a tin roof to start with, I'm not sure. But the one that's on it now, it was, when I came here, it was in pretty good shape. And I thought it was in better shape than it was. And what I found when I was working up there one day was that asphalt shingles were crumbling.
That's what's happening at my house now.
So what we did, we took the easy way out. We got that bucket of tar, and I think I put around 18 5-gallon cans on it. I really put it on thick, and it held it. It's held it several years. And I'm not sure that it was a good deal of trouble to put on.
Smelly, dirty, nasty stuff.
Now, it wasn't any trouble where you could get to it, but over on that side where there's nothing below you, that was hard to do. I could have put a scaffold up, and that would have done it. And what we did, the boy, Wade Swycourt, helped me, and we'd take a turn about. One of us would sit on the crown of the roof and hold a rope, and the other fellow would get on there.
Two hazards, the holder and the rope.
Yes, yes, one of those masonry brushes, you see, and just put it on thick.
They were advertising in the Miami papers nylon covering of that sort, which said was effective for all roofs except vinyl tile. It wouldn't work on that. But it's flexible and not susceptible to temperature changes, apparently. So I'm going to investigate this and see, because I've got to do something about my, the front slope of mine has the asphalt tile. And the back part is just tar paper with thick layers of tar on it. Now, I have to have that done over about every 5 years. Summer sun in Galesburg is hot. But mine's a gently sloping roof, so there's no trouble in working on it.
I don't know much about a roof.
You know, you have one over your head, but that's all.
Like you say, the plastics, the new material they use, if you could keep up with that, find out about it.
Well, I hadn't seen or heard of this before, and I'll inquire when I get back home as to what this is.
When I first came out here, I bought a little two-wheel trailer. It made out of plywood, and it had a fitted canvas on it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did, I let it sit right out there through the rainy season, and it caught water, and about a month's time rotted out.
Mm.
And since then, that hurt me, because it wasn't sturdy, but it hauled anything I wanted to haul. And since then, I don't leave anything out. But even the corral down there, that, you see, I haven't done enough on the outdoors now for several years. It's just gone apart. But what I started to do, you see, was put the whole corral under a shed. Now, that's built out of the material that came out of the old Gainesville livestock market when it was on this end of town. And they tore it down and rebuilt it the bigger way on the other side of town. And they got those big old boards and everything. Well, they're all gone now. And if I had, even when I came out here, it had been up for several years. It was too big. And if I had just cut it in two and used that material, and then put just a tin roof on it, like I've got out there, you see, it'd been just good as new. Because that old material will never wear out if you keep it under some sort of shelter. You've got to keep that sun off of it.
And that's what does it.
Oh, that sun is fierce, you know. And the changes in temperature and the damp and the wetness. Oh, I tell you. You see that once you get just a little hole in there, it'll hold the moisture.
Mm-hmm.
Once it softens just a little bit, you see, it's just like these great roads out here. You get just a little puddle there, and the car goes through it, and the puddle gets that much bigger.
Puddlier.
Yeah. But under just an ordinary tin roof, you see, it lasts forever. You won't have any trouble with it.
I'm surprised.
It looks like people would have some judgment like that. You see, I have put more boners out here.
The tin roof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like the heat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised that more use hasn't been made of solar heat for houses in Florida. There were a few places years ago in Miami that had those, but I haven't seen a house recently that has used that.
Yeah.
I would think that this could be good. There was no heat in my apartment at all.
That was the old solar water heater.
Yeah.
Our neighbors used to have it.
Yeah.
And a big glass section in the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah. It works.
Yeah. And if it's a cloudy day, you flip the switch.
Yeah.
And they had a little electric.
Well, why did that go out? Why haven't they used more of that?
I don't know.
Because
it would solve some of this heating problem.
Yeah.
That, if we're going to have trouble with fuel of one sort or another, to go back to this kind of thing.
Now, I made that three-car garage out there. It cost me about $120. And most of that was a tin. I bought new tin to go on it, you see. And What I did out there, I tried to get along with as little of the framing. So you see, all it has are those 9-foot posts. It's got no rafters.
Not enough to hold the tin roof in place.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But now, you see, I couldn't concentrate on enough problems at one time. The tin roof is hot. You let the sun come down on that, and you sit down under that, and you start fanning, and you wonder what in the world happened to you.
Take your cooking out and do that now,
Pan.
Yeah. Your heating problem solved, yeah. And your cooking problem solved.
Well, now you see, what I can do, I'm not going to do it now. I'll just sit in the shade. But I could put that aluminum paint on there, and it won't do it. But I could have start with, I could have put aluminum roofing
on. I'd claim it that you're just going to have to start all over again and undo all these mistakes you made as you went along.
And have you looked at our 3-car garage?
Yeah, I looked at it. Saw people driving in and out of it today.
Well, I heard it.
Got the sun off in the cars, anyway.
Yeah.
Mrs. Miles, how about another glass of water for me? I don't know why I should be so thirsty, but I seem to be tonight.
Let me tell you, this is 9:30. I don't know where John's going to want to play game bridge if I don't go on to bed.
John, we used to play bridge until we were just, you know, gone. We just couldn't hold our eyes open another minute. We'd all be ready to be 1 o'clock or something like that. John would all be ready to leave, and John would pick up the cards and say, "Do we have time for another game? You remember that?"
All these stories that they're remembering, huh? Oh, all those parties we had at the faculty club. And the times I had getting Mrs. Spratt to give the dinners I wanted. She always wanted different menus, and I kept saying to her, "Thank you. I want."
You want ice in it?
No, thank you. I want this, that, and the other thing. But you had that last time, she'd say. And I said, "Everybody liked it last time. Why shouldn't I have it again? I know that's good." But she couldn't see that. And I should have a different menu every time.
Well, look. Take something and go in there and open one of open the window.
We're just knocking paint out.
Oh, I just did ask
the question. Can't you just leave the doors open?
Yeah, but I think it'd be better if one of the windows was
open. Well, about time to do.
Oh, you'll have to have a screwdriver, Rick. Let's see which one would be the best. Oh.
Well, it's not a screwdriver, you want your cutting knife. I don't have anything.
Well, I'll stay out of it. Let them settle my problem for me.
You really will have to have it open, too. Just suffocate.
Exactly.
It's so much cooler with a little breeze.
Yeah, it makes a difference.
That might do.
Ooh. Yeah. Military life.
Look at this.
Oh.
Who did the vegetables?
I don't know. They're nice, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Having light problems.
Yes. I stayed in that room for a while, and we changed the light so that I could have a floor lamp by my desk. Yeah. The ceiling light is there. Yeah.
Lights?
Mm-hmm.
Bulbs?
No, the lights. We got two of those six cell lights.
Well, I think one of them might be here.
They got one?
No, I don't believe so, thank you. It does make me more thirsty. I don't know why I never should be so thirsty. It was hot, though.
It was hot.
Down this morning, and it was, even though it was a sharp drive, a hot one.
I've been drinking gallons of water. It's so hot.
And this friend of mine in Largo, and I was with last week ago Sunday, have five orange trees, I think, in there. Yard, so Mr. Bud insisted upon giving me a 2-quart jar of plastic jar of orange juice to bring back with me. Well, I bought some grapefruit to eat the last week, and I had the 2 quarts of orange juice to drink up and 3 grapefruit to eat, so I was filled with juices for the last week.
Mm-hmm.
I got used to being liquefied, I guess. Cousins in St. Petersburg have grapefruit trees, but their grapefruit was all gone. I just stopped to say hello, had a cup of coffee, and it was a late breakfast Monday morning on my way back to Cable Plant Bay.
I still live in St. Petersburg. It's a nice town.
I find St. Petersburg depressing. I don't know whether it's so many old people.
Well, that's the last Florida, is that right? South Florida. Yeah.
I am partly because I have 3 friends in the nursing homes over there. They're all, one of them didn't know me at all when I was there in December. I took him and the fellow he's living with out for dinner, and it wasn't until middle of the evening that Oscar began to place who I was. And it was a terrible conversation because nobody I could mention that we had known for years and years that he had any recollection of. He had a stroke from June, May, I guess, 84.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rather depressing visit. I have a former colleague from Knox and his wife who lived there in the Presbyterian house. So decrepit, but not what they were when I knew them in their prime.
Better to remember people as they were in their prime.
Yes.
Let me see. John, could you find out where the lights are?
Well, probably. If I'm told. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just about ready for you know what. If you'll excuse me.
I'm going to say goodnight too. I'm going to walk through the bathroom real quickly, but I'll be out in about 10 minutes. I'm very fast.
Okay. Is it supposed to be a left hand or is that a potato?
Isn't that awful? I keep threatening to take this. This is one that I kept threatening to take it and have it framed, and our friend said, let's take it down. I wanted to get up. All the kitchen stuff goes up, you know, and that's kind of thing. But it needs to be someone to use it. We had this real cute at one time, John. It was at a sort of a country kitchen. We had a lounge over there, and I had, you know, interesting little pictures over there. This is the original paper, I think. It must be 90 years old. And we put this old rug on the floor because at one time he was doing some acoustical things in here and that stuff up there. And then we decided that this was the place where we'd gather and talk and the students would work. So we just turned the thing over into a workroom. So I had to put it sort of in and out, you know. I never,
by the way.
Yeah, sort of by the way. And I tell you what, we had just about, this is, in most of the country, we collapse about this time because we've been outside, you know. And even Debbie and Rick, the neighbors, about 10:30, everything's quiet.
Locked up. Now, what time do you get up in the morning?
Well, I tell you what time would you like to get off?
Well, I've got a long drive, something over 500 miles.
500? Well, look, why then? I usually get up at, if you'd like to get off, say, by 7:30, would you like to get off
Well, by 8, anyway, would that be?
It doesn't matter, I'll just get up and we've got, would you like some orange juice right now?
No, I don't think
so. I've
got
fresh orange juice. Oh, you want a scrambled egg?
No scrambled egg.
Yeah, you have to have a scrambled egg. I'm scrambling good eggs. Scrambled egg and piece of toast and coffee and some orange juice.
Okay.
Is that it?
Okay, that's fine.
I have oatmeal. Guy cooks oatmeal.
No, I won't have any hot cereal. I really don't need this protein diet. I had a hamburger that's new, and I've been very good today and carrying on. But
I didn't know that you had to have anything. This was all this was tonight was chicken, of course, and it didn't taste like I thought it was going to. But anyway,
it was very good.
But
I had a variety in it, which
I had a lot of vegetables in it. But it was more protein than anything else. A lot of mushrooms in it. But I have on days I'm in town late, I have to sort of fix something that when I come in, I can just do it. Well, we can get up and Guy can fix the oatmeal and we can get out of the way, or if you want to get off by 7:30, it'll be easy for us if you want to get off that early.
No, why don't you plan to eat about 7:30 then? Get me off by 8.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
I can get up without your getting up at all and stop along the way. You don't have to get up at all.
No. Well, let's just get you some, because there'll be coffee and that kind of thing. It's our treasure.
Well, I'm distressed
and
about this. The two little green leaves that should go in. I'll see where I can locate those. I like the gardenias. I'm going to make some more of those. I bought some of those shells today in Leesburg.
Mick chose this, and I thought it was rather nice. And it's pretty sweet. Please, me too.
You may.
Let me give you some.
How tight is it?
Oh, I have to sort of rearrange it.
Let
me get you some more water. Now, what is it? Would you like some wine, or would you like a drink?
No, no. I just have some water and things. And then.
Would you like some? You sure you don't want any ice in it?
Well, maybe if you put a piece of ice in, yeah. Fix me up beautifully. No, I'm afraid that would just make me thirsty. I don't know why I should be so thirsty. I don't think it's so much for today. It's another day.
Well, you know, it's...
two soft drinks. Well, I had one before dinner, one after dinner last night after I got into the motel. And had a drink with my friend. I had hot tea for dinner last night. Drinking ice water before I went to bed last night, too.
You should have come on and spent the night here last night and driven back to see your family.
Yeah. Well, as I was saying, I didn't.
You always have a room. You have a room here anytime. You don't have to stay in a hotel.
I thank you. My plans were sort of fuddled up there at the end. Not that it made too much difference, actually. But had I known I wasn't going to stay in Orlando Monday night, I could have made some other arrangements.
Well, now you want to take that. I mean, you want some water to take in there.
Yeah.
We, I tell you what, instead of the faucet is all right to drink out of. But this is better.
You still got the tank full?
I don't think it's as full.
Oh, you need two cups. And you're heating up the whole goddamn pot.
You think you have now?
Ryan, guy.
I couldn't find the
sprigs that I had ready for your flower, so I just pulled two more off. What I did was to cut off the end of them so that they would be small enough to slide in to stick those in there. Yeah.
Okay.
John, you're going to spoil us. Having all those pretty things.
Well, I haven't had many chances, you know. I have to take advantage of them when they come.
John fixed you an egg. You have to eat one. And also, this is Guy's famous toast.
Famous toast. I've been making toast in the oven all the time down in Florida. I didn't have a toaster. I didn't have a teapot, either a teapot or a tea kettle. And Kitty gave me a teapot when I was over there, and Emma gave me a vase. But my toast still had to be made in the oven.
That's the thing I'll turn it off. It's the POWs. That's all.
Yeah, I take it. That they're all coming back.
Yeah.
You're
doing it in such a mechanical way.
All saluting just as ever.
Isn't it awful? Isn't
it awful? John, is this all you have?
All I have.
Okay.
This should last me till my next stop at noon.
Well, if worse comes to worse, you can follow the road.
There are all sorts of places along 75, yeah.
Oh, are they? Oh, yes, it's
the intersections there, yeah. That tells you what kind of gas you can get and what kind of food is available sometimes, just snacks or meals and so forth.
Oh, you mean the sign up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she'll go along. It's this exit, so and so and so and so.
Yeah.
And these gasoline signs, now they have about 75 feet high, so you can see them miles away.
Yes. That's the tax. You see, that reduces their taxes.
Oh.
Well, that's the way I figure it. I don't know what their reason is, but they really... I told John yesterday, I worked with these chaps so much, and I can't get them out helping me. They know kind of what they'll do. And I notice, I know when I do as much desk work as I do, whether it's important or not, it's still, I just stay half-addled. I go out to see to change the motor oil, and I'll drain the transmission. That's the sort of thing. And now you see, if you can stay at it a day or two, you kind of
get yourself accustomed.
Get your balance back. But what I told John, that's just the view of it. That's the state that they stay in on the campuses, and they don't realize it how ill they are. See, they go around with all these professors and notes and things in their heads. You say they don't do very well. That doesn't matter whether they do well or not. Or they're bright or not bright, it's all the same. But they all rush in for it.
More and more. Although I was reading the other day that the high school enrollment is to drop, I've forgotten how many percent, by 1980, and then the college enrollment will begin going down in 1982,
mm-hmm.
as the birth rate has declined, and we're now through the peak, or in the peak, apparently, of the, can't be the post-war, now I don't know what produced all the children along 17, 18 years ago, but their figures indicate that. And there are schools in Galesburg now. They built a lot of middle schools, and they've got more space than they have children. And the a moment in there. Either the grammar school or the high school, I've forgotten, or well, the middle school. One of them fell off this year.
You think maybe if they don't have such a so many, that then the students will have a better chance?
Well, I wonder whether they're going to keep going to college as much as they have in the past, too. These people that, you know, talking to this friend of mine, Tuesday, who can go as they can. We have a junior college in Galesburg called Sandburg, and those fellows go in for a year of vocational training and can get excellent jobs there in Galesburg. They had a very bad time the year it opened. They had a two-year program all set up, and it was very nicely run. There were a number of the businessmen and the plant employers that offered these courses, and they could take the students right into their own manufacturing plant there in Galesburg and put them through the routine, you know. Well, instead of coming back for a second year to finish up this program, all these kids can get such good jobs in these plants that they didn't come back for a second year, and they took the jobs. So they had to revise. They had to revise the program somewhat. Well, this is, for a good many people, I suspect this is probably much better than trying to jam them through colleges if their parents can be made to see that they're not really going to do any good in college. And
well, and this is Big C, and this is honey. And if you prefer apple or strawberry, you take your choice.
Oh, I have a little apple, I guess.
Okay. Just take this out of the fig jar.
Knox's enrollment has fallen in the last 2 years. Much to everybody's concern.
Who?
Our enrollment at Knox. We hit a peak of about 1,500 and it dropped to about 1,450 and then to about 1,400 last fall.
And that makes a difference?
Sure does. There were 14 faculty, I think, leaving for one reason or another, and they replaced only about half of them. Well, two of us went in English. Doug became director of libraries, and I retired. They didn't replace either of us. And my advanced courses in Romantic and Victorian period aren't being given this year at all. They had to replace the people in languages. We lost the whole French department. We have a French program in Besançon, and Miss Jeffries was over there in charge of that. She came back. She's been on the faculty for some time, but everybody else in French is here. The other two are both new. And there's a new Russian and a new German. I haven't got to know the people who were new last year, and I made no effort to get started on the new ones this year.
John, you ought to be ashamed. How would you manage this colossus here?
I'd be swamped. I'd move back to the city in about a month, probably.
That's right.
Well, you think that at the university, 1,500 students seems so ideal.
Well, when I went to Knox, the Burgos, I said last night, there were just about between 500 and 600 there. And then the enrollment went up to 800 and 900 and was pretty steady there for 5-6 years. And the president kept saying 1,200 is the optimum number. That'll give us 3 faculty in every department and will allow us to do this and so forth. Well, when we got to 1,200, then he had another idea that we could do this if we had 1,400, you know. I think 1,600 is what he wants now, which we have never been able to get.
That just takes a lot of bright wealthy. Are they all pretty well to do?
I think the overall tuition, they have to live in the dormitories, eat in the college mess halls. I think the overall fee is $4,200.
Yeah.
It was 39. I think it went up another 300.
For 1 year?
For 1 year.
I had no idea that it was.
The tuition is 26 or 27, I think. What happened, though, when this acceleration and the cost started was that our assistance went up. We'd been giving about $100,000 in scholarships and assistance of one sort. Well, that went up to nearly $500,000 a year. We had some very nicely endowed scholarships and whatnot, so that there are a lot of students, I have no idea how large a percentage, that are under with assistance of one sort.
And they're needy students and wealthy students, too. They all win scholarships.
They do. Some of them are geared to take into account need. We had a terrible fight over this many years ago as to whether this should be involved with it or not, whether we were concerned fundamentally with intelligence or whether the need should be. And we have compromised. There are some that are strictly on academic achievement, and others which take into account the students. And there's a very elaborate, to me, a very embarrassing format for application in which the whole family income has to be outlined so that the college knows at least what's reported to be the family income to help them decide on the amount and to the.
John, the day, don't you slow up just. Explain Knox College. I mean, you need to be on the road.
Oh, I'm not as much of a
rush. Well, now you see, here's the thing. I never did want to be in a big place, in a big school or a big town. Never did. And it's the only place I'd ever been able to get a job or hold it.
How long were you at Moorhead?
I was there 10 years.
10 years.
Yes.
That's just the time I length of time I was at Tennessee.
Huh?
I was at Tennessee 10 years.
Oh yes, yes. But
well, we just can't pick our ideal spot. As I said last night, I didn't want to go to the Middle West, and I didn't think I wanted to teach in a small college, and that's where I ended my career. Galesburg is not an ideal spot in any sense. It's a cold city in the winter, and it's a hot city in the summer.
Let me tell you. Roscoe used to bitch a lot about Knoxville. And I never did care for Knoxville, you see, but I didn't know anything about it. I always had a feeling that he knew about those things.
Well.
Did you take to Knoxville?
No, not particularly.
Well, what was it? You see, I didn't know a thing about Knoxville.
Well, I don't know if there was anything particularly. I just, there wasn't anything particularly attractive physically about it.
No.
Culturally, I didn't think there was very much to draw people. This is another difficulty that. Places like Knox have. The fellow who's now chairman of the English department is a Michigan PhD and Michigan resident. And he and his wife were both miserable when they came to Knox. The first year, they didn't like anything there. They'd been used to Ann Arbor and the things that were going on there. And the second year, it wasn't quite so bad. But it took them about 6-7 years before they were both reconciled to a little Midwestern town. Now they both think it's just ideal. They just love it. They're building a new home outside of the town and whatnot. But it took some time to adjust from the kind of cultural environment
they
wanted.
They wanted things to be going on.
Yeah, they wanted things to, there wasn't enough to do. And we've got a good many more things. Now they've got too many things going, I think, at the college now. So the weekends, you sometimes have to choose. The former chairman of the department sent me a little note just a couple of weeks ago, and he said, I've got to get this off to you because we've got two plays, regular production. We've got an experimental production. There's a symphony concert and a civic music concert. Something else. There were five things for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday that weekend. And he says you just have to choose. He's got to the stage where he can't go to everything.
Yeah, how about that?
But that wasn't the way it was when I went to Knox. There wasn't enough to do then.
I have another piece.
No, I'm not going to have any. It's excellent toast. How did you make this?
Well, it's a little too hard. I'm sorry. I can't.
It was just nice and crisp.
The cake fell, you see.
Wow. Cook didn't watch it closely enough.
Yeah. I could use it all the time. I used to make pretty good toast. I started the oven.
Oh.
I toasted up. See those two boxes over there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm toasting and double toast.
When Faye was at Wilson College, she wrote back and she said, don't send me cakes and don't send me this and that, but just send me boxes of guy's toast.
Well, at that time, it was pretty good. But you know what, things fall off. They don't stay the same all the time.
That's true. World moves ever onward, downward, upward, something.
One thing I noticed when I was in Kentucky, schools go up and down, departments go up and down. Now at one time there we were just everything worked right, and then for nothing worked. And it made a big difference. I mean, it just didn't percolate.
We have been very careful about this sort of thing with the high schools. The high schools, we draw a good many students from the Chicago suburbs, and New Trier and Windsor and Evanston High Schools are all rated every year on some sort of scale and so forth, so that we know that if we take students only from the top fourth of the graduating class in this school, that in order to make the thing even out, we can take them only from the top tenth of this school because this is a poorer school
mm-hmm.
than this one. And this is a very elaborate process that the admissions office keeps up with all the time.
Yeah.
And it's surprising how rapidly a high school can change from good to bad or bad to good depending upon the personnel that are involved. The administration very often is responsible for it. It isn't the teachers necessarily.
Yes, the administration, but the administration gets all crossed up. And there's no way of, no remedy for it. No way of forestalling all that.
The local high school is in an awful mess just now. They have a very bad, I think, student advisor there who gives all the worst advice. And we're very careful about taking students from the local high school. We have to make sure that we're getting what we think we're getting because we can't rely on his judgments at all anymore. If he recommends a student, this doesn't mean anything. And these student advisors are all over now, too, and counselors, and that's all they do is to counsel students. We've debated this, whether to take a couple of faculty out of the academics altogether and put them in charge of making out the schedules, being responsible for this and for all kinds of academic advice to the whole student body. But nobody has volunteered for the job. It would be an awful headache.
Now, I notice at this stage, I can see what goes on easier than I used to when I was just in the middle of it. I got so, I've got to the point where the, when I see, if you were to see this campus here, you'd think so too. Now, I don't know how it would be if I were in some more favorable place.
You want just another sip?
Just another sip. That's kind of thank you.
But if I could recommend any one remarkable improvement for the school, it is for the students not to go close to the campus. They could eat a little picnic lunch, and just don't be a part of campus life, whatever that is.
I don't see.
From what I've had with them, I don't see anything good about it, and I see a great deal that is, I don't know, just undermines everything. Well, let me tell you, here's the thing. The administrators are administering so much that they couldn't take on anything like that if they wanted to. You can't even talk to them about it. It's got to the point of these think tanks.
Well, of course, it depends upon the size of your school. Now, our dean of women, she's no longer dean of women, she's assistant dean of, we don't have a dean of women any longer, that's passé. She's assistant dean of students, and the assistant dean of the college, who has to be my best friend there, Don Sandville. Debbie and Don do almost nothing but student advising. This is their job. And it's mostly academic, but not necessarily so. They're both, the dean of the students is a trained personnel man, and Ivan has all the troublesome problems, but Debbie and Don do really nothing except the counseling. Neither one of them is psychologically trained, so that they're not. We have two trained psychologists on one of them is a psychiatrist on the campus who's supposed to deal with real troublesome problems, but the ordinary routine Debbie and Don take care of and do a good job. I think the students like them both and will go to them with their problems. We've had difficulties where students wouldn't talk to anybody about what the difficulty was because they didn't trust anybody. Well, I think
just a different thing with that side of college.
Yeah, yes, the problems are kind of quite different.
Anything like this mass on the big campus.
But the administrators, they've just so full up as it is, they don't get home for supper on time.
Well, we have complaints all the time about our president that the students don't even know what he looks like. He's out raising money most of the time, traveling around the world and whatnot. So. But the dean of the college is in residence all the time, so that but he's relatively new in his third year, and he's a scholar and not a administrator. He's a distinguished physicist. And much more interested in his research than he is in administering his deanship. He came to us from Wabash, and we spent a whole year looking for one after Herman Mueller decided to go back to teaching. And I like Lou very much, but I don't think he's any dean at all. So I don't know how long this is going to last before we'll have a change. But nobody wants, there are any number of little colleges in Illinois that haven't been able to find either a president or a dean. Nobody wanted to be an administrator after all the troubles that they had in 68 and 69, you know. So there are all kinds of jobs being filled temporarily, you know, when they haven't been able to find anybody.
You had a hand in that student protest.
Well, not any more than I could help. College did, yes.
And at one point, they were demanding a good bit.
They moved into the dean's office and were in there for 3 days. And it wasn't just blacks, although this was the main impetus. Our trouble was, we discovered too late, really, to do anything about it, that it was all being agitated from outside. They'd come in from Chicago deliberately to make as much trouble as possible. And when it came to dealing with our own students, when we were able to sort this thing out a little bit, we had two or three days when we weren't sure whether we were going to have a building burned down or not. But after that, things quieted down quite rapidly. But it was very exciting there for a while. We missed 2 days of classes. There weren't enough there to hold them. But the bulk of the students, as I suppose is true most any place, simply didn't care one way or another. They weren't taking a stand either for or against the protesters, of whom there were, well, perhaps 60, something of this sort.
And you saw more of it than you wanted to.
Well, some students were very, very much concerned and were dropping in faculty offices to say, look, what do we do, and what's the out, and so forth, so that you had a chance to talk to a number of them. But those, when that crisis passed, you just have a series of little ones of one kind or another. We had quite a to-do over hours in the dormitory. We have two cooperative dormitories now, and we have two dormitories where the girls are on one floor and the men on the next and whatnot. And there was a great deal of to-do, particularly from alumni over this. We had some of them on the campus for a while after the faculty passed that regulation. But I don't think we've had any particular troubles with it. It seems to have worked out very well. The two cooperative ones, we have a faculty couple living in the big old houses. They have about 25 students in each. And the students are, they have waiting lists for people to live in those all the time. So we've been as flexible as possible to try and get all of the potentials operating. Can't keep up with it all the time. Well, I'll make a last trip to the bathroom and pack my last belongings.
Well, I'll go get my cow.
It's the thing that says that we can keep the land, so they're going to assess it for agricultural stuff.
Yeah.
I was telling Faye about that man at the tax assessor's office.
Yeah, he was a pleasant surprise. Kept himself skinny when he was a kid rolling a barrel.
Yeah, that's nice.
That was nice.
Yeah, he was skinny. A little thin barrel hoop and
a little loop of wire.
Piece of wire with a thing running through sandy ground.
That's really something.
Yeah, he was dressed in a pink shirt and a white tie.
Yeah, so then I look at you, man. Did he tell you?
About our grand? Yeah. She can see Shaw.
I can see him this weekend.
Well, I'm not talking about what you see, but you see what we run into.
Up on campus.
Now we came back, talked to Wade, and he'd gone through it all several times. See, had made him out.
So he gonna help out?
No, he just added to the confusion.
You're not going to help him.
No, he'll help, yes, but I mean, he just added to the confusion, the talk, you know. I got to go back and out and Xerox those, and
I can run in and do that if you want.
You know better than I am. I'm no better than you are.
I got to stop by the bank anyway.
The bank open this way?
You can drive up and up.
Hey, you ought to let the cows in. Now, how would you go about letting the cows in, Debbie?
Well, I'd go down there and yell for them.
Well, that's a cock for the horse. You got to prepare for them, don't you know?
Oh, I'd put the bull up. Yeah, and put the weanlings up. Mm-hmm, and turn over the water. Then I'd go down and yell for them on the other side of the gap. Keep the gap closed till they came up. Then I'd open the gap and take them up. Close the gap after them. Take them up to this gap.
Well, you're going to do a little set of three with a bad foot. She's out here now. I'm going to keep her up a day or two.
Salt. Isn't that what Cookie put on it? Salt and water?
Well, I got the medicine to put on it. But you got her. You can't let her in with the others, and then you'll have to cut her out all over again.
Why can't you just leave her there where she is?
Well, she's out there in the open, go where they go through.
Put her in the lane.
Have to do that first.
I thought you meant she was over here with that old 18.
Well, that's all right. Put her over there.
Well, I thought that's where she was. That's why.
Now what you gonna do with these old cows over here? Gonna let them into the oats over here?
Could, or just leave them. We'll put them in that one over there.
That's
the other one. Just turn, why, just turn them in over there. Leave them. 3 o'clock, you can leave them till dinner time. Then they'd come out. You shut them in there like Shirley. She never has her cows come right out. Of course, she leaves them in all day, and they get so thirsty, they come right out.
Yeah, and leave them until they get thirsty. Close the gap on them.
Uh-huh.
She's lying, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to do the cussing?
I can practice.
Yeah, I said, when you hear me cussing around here, you just, all you can say is that, well, that's pretty healthy.
Everything's
all right.
You
got a little
cussing going on.
We'll level off. That maybe could do the cooking.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't be able to eat it. We ought to bake some bread. That's what we haven't done.
And that would be something, guy, if you get some two of these flatheads that, you know, have those gaps and things.
And they start that making bread. What the hell do you want to make bread for when you got, when you buy it, 2-day-old bread over there for half price? You just can't put any time on that sort of stuff. You didn't eat it in before. I had to eat all.
Oh, shoot, I ate some of it. It was hidden. Somebody hid it.
Very little. It hid right out of here. On the front of the
no, table. It was hidden for a long time. I baked too much.
Well, where's I get?
You came all the way out here and have to go back today?
Well, I didn't think about those damn things, Faye. I told you the Xerox in.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Oh.
Good enough time.
Yeah, I keep saying to myself, anything that gets you off the ground like this stuff out here, these things we've learned out here, and it just downright pleasure, you see. There's bound to be something to it. I never had anything like this before. I don't care what you call it, revelation, or I don't call it anything. I don't care what you call it. I just got into that other in connection with Whitman. But it is really interesting in that light. Now you see, to start with, that fall, I didn't feel any freedom at all. You see, I was just pushed and pushing so much. Everything. I look at everything. And I actually saw so little. He got the fidgets.
Better let him zero.
And I didn't feel any of those bardic symptoms. I never did feel any of those until I went up to the office that year and started looking for a niche. And then I began to see it in terms of what they were doing. And what they were doing, you see, all that Samlot stuff, you see, and the style sheet, and all that awful prose they put out. And I got to seeing all those things. And one thing after another, and I studied it. I worked in it. I didn't just look at it and play with it. I worked in it. I'd go to a staff meeting, see, and I'd take the notes, and the president would get out something, and I'd get into it. And one of the most interesting things I got into was the president's statement on the Cornwell case. And It was a colossal negative step. A judge, a judicial mind, yes, but certainly no academic mind. And Hellstrom, I wrote it out to Hellstrom, and he could see it. And he thought so. So I sent a little copy of it to Long, and he wrote back that he just didn't have time or energy for all that stuff. Just too much on him. So I... That's when I began to see those body implications.